So today we begin a new series for the month of June, and we'll be staying with these stories from the Genesis and from the Old Testament in particular over the next couple weeks. Next Sunday is a special Sunday of music, but in 2 weeks, Reverend Byron is going to take up the story of Joseph and his brothers, and then at the end of the month, Nicole is going to be preaching about Naomi and Ruth and those family relationships. So it's sort of a different kind of family relationship. But we're going to start today with Jacob and Esau, and we have a little quiz for you. So not only is the Bible fascinated with families, but it seems like American TV has been fascinated with families over the years. And so can you name these famous families? Ozzie and Harriet. That's right. Ozzie and Harriet Nelson, and sort of the quintessential perfect 1950s family there. Father knows best. That's right. And all of you who are dads, this is the way our families look at us, isn't it? You know, waiting for that next bit of wisdom we're going to spew forth from our mouths. Lovingly, adoringly. How about this one? My three sons. That's right. And this is a shift. Remember when the show came on? It was a shift because he's a single dad raising three kids on his own, but with the help of Uncle Charlie. That's right, Uncle Charlie. So they've got this other configuration of family. The Brady Bunch. And what is the storyline here, the basic storyline? It's about blended families, right? You know, here's a story of a man named Brady who was busy with three boys, and then the lovely lady who has three girls of his own, and they come together, and now they form the Brady Bunch. And it's all about those family relationships and the little rivalries that go on among the teenagers and the younger kids. How about this one? All in the Family. And there was a particular relationship in this show where you saw family tension and stress come out. Between who? Archie Bunker and Meathead. That's right. His not so affectionate name for his son-in-law. And so you see the son-in-law and the father-in-law with different values, different ways of seeing the world, and they sort of butt heads just on occasion. You know this famous family. Ah, yes. How many of you walk? Come on, admit. How many of you stayed up every Friday night and watched Dallas? Anybody? Yes, a few of you. And that's all about power and intrigue and deceit and all these different family relationships. Anyone recognize a young Michael J. Fox? What show? Family Ties, that's right. Family Ties. The young capitalist Michael Fox, who's not like a typical kid. The Cosby family, the Huxtables, we all tuned in, the Cosbys. And how about this one? Full House. That's right. Sam knows this one. Full House. And you see, again, different family configurations and the Mary-Kate and Ashley, all the Olsen twins. And how about this one? Modern Family. Modern Family, which airs now and gets big ratings. One of the few shows that Holly and I watch with any regularity. It makes me laugh almost all the time. And always comes around to some sort of serious theme. A lot of humor, but a lot of serious stuff that they deal with. They deal with old relationships that get healed and different configurations of what family looks like. So what you see over the changing years is that all of these families sort of reflect the different shape of the American family along the way, don't they? And in the Bible, we get all of these family stories too, particularly in the book of Genesis. The book of Genesis is dealing with the stories of our patriarchs and our matriarchs, and this is our family history that we're looking at. And so we're going to look today at this story of Jacob and Esau. And we're going to have a little help with our brick characters as we do our Lego series. So Esau was the hardier brother, the one who, as Reverend Nicole said, was outside more, and he was the hunter-gatherer. And Jacob was the crafty, wily one. He was always out for Jacob. His name pretty much says it all, because Jacob means what? Heel grabber. Heel grabber. He comes out of the womb mad that he's not first. And he's grabbing the heel, like pulling him back, and he wants to be number one. And so you see Jacob in all of these very, very intense stories of family relationships, getting what he wants. And so when his brother comes in from the fields one day, and he's hungry and he's tired, and he says, "I've got this great stew for you. But would you mind signing a little document here that says that I get your birthright? A little trade. Can we do a trade?" And in the moment of weakness and vulnerability, Esau says, "Sure, I'm starving." and he steals the birthright from the firstborn son. And then you have him wresting away a blessing from his father. When his father's old and can't see very well, Jacob goes and puts some hair on his arms to make it feel and like his older brother Esau. He makes himself smell a little bit like he's been outside, and he wrests away the blessing of the father, which is supposed to go to the firstborn. So Jacob is all out for who? For Jacob. Just a rascal. And as Nicole said, it got so bad that his mother thinks that Esau is going to get him, and so he's on the run from his family for years and years. And so where we pick up the story today in Genesis 32 and 33 is now at a really critical turning point, because Jacob is coming back to try to reconnect, and he's scared to death. He's heard that Esau has 100 men at the beginning of chapter 32, but by the beginning of chapter 33, he's actually got 400 men with him. And he is hurt and betrayed his brother pretty badly, so he's calculating even there. He sort of divides the troops, so if they conquer some of us, then maybe they won't get all of us. And so he separates them out, but he also sends these peace offerings forward of cattle and sheep, you know, livestock, because he wants to make amends, and he's scared to death. And it's that night before this encounter that he wrestles with this man slash God. It's very unclear in the text who it is he's wrestling with. Clear to Jacob that he understands himself to be wrestling with God. It's one of these theophanies, these moments of God revealing who God is in a person. Sort of like, remember Abraham entertaining angels unawares back earlier in the story? So same kind of story. And so in the middle of this wrestling match, it goes on all night, it says, and it says, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." Jacob says to the stranger, to God. And so they wrestle it out. And all night long, he finally gets changed by that. It's a transforming moment that's going to prepare him for the next phase of his life and for the encounter with his brother. Now, all this story says to me some very interesting things, and I think some very hopeful things. You know, to know that God's family tree and our family tree is full of flawed, selfish heel grabbers, who become part of the salvation history, even in spite of all of that. I mean, we talk about the God of Abraham and Jacob, don't we? Even to this day, as our God. And look at this figure of Jacob that we're lifting up as this great paragon of virtue. Well, not really. He's pretty mixed bag. He does find redemption, and he finds a new way, and he finds a way to cling to that covenant with God. But to think that Jacob could be used in the story, I find it's very helpful and very hopeful. And like Jacob, we are invited to wrestle with God. And in the end, that will bring us a blessing, and it will also bring us transformation when we do that. For Jacob, it literally means that he gets a name change. He goes from Jacob, which is what? I just told you. This is your quiz. Heel grabber to Israel, which means one who strives with God. The one who strives with God. And that's a good thing, this wrestling it out with God. I love this story, and you could preach a whole sermon just on this story. But for today, I love the fact that Jacob is invited, and that's a good thing that he wrestles it out with God that night. Because I've wrestled it out with God too. And you probably have at some point as well. You've asked questions, you've doubted, you've wondered, you've screamed. And you've wrestled it out. And God can take it when we do. And somehow transformation comes. I find that my greatest growth as a Christian comes when I'm wrestling it out with God. Not just when everything's butterflies and rainbows. I mean, blessing comes there too. And growth comes there. Don't get me wrong. But I think the deep growth, the ways that we're changed at the core of who we are, comes in those moments when we really wrestle it out with God, from Jacob to Israel. I have to warn you, though, you might go away with a bit of a limp when you wrestle it out like that. Now, there's a pastor out in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, who was sort of ruminating on this. How can it be that the God of the universe can wrestle with Jacob and it's a draw? How can it be that Jacob wrestles them to sort of a standstill that night? What in the world could that possibly mean? And he said he finally got a glimpse into that when he was reading a story in our Iowa magazine. And the story was about this wrestling match between two high schools, Humboldt and Ogden High School. And it was late in the season, and Humboldt had this young man on the team who was pretty affected by Down's syndrome, was not a great wrestler, but was on the team, went to all the practices, was fully supportive, and he said, "Do you have one of your wrestlers who would wrestle him?" And so the Ogden coach asked, and this one boy stepped forward, and not only did he get on the mat with this guy, but he wrestled it out for the full 6 minutes, all the periods. And he was savvy enough to know how to give the other guy enough points to win. And so not only would he have the chance to wrestle, but he'd have the chance to be there with his arm lifted after the match was over in victory. And you can imagine that gymnasium was full of a lot of tears that day, and it somehow became holy ground. It was more than just a gym that day. And Nathan Asing says, you know, that's how God wrestles with us. Of course, God could squish us like a bug in a nanosecond, he says. But for our benefit, God is always available to wrestle with us at whatever level we are capable of wrestling. God sent Jesus into the world to wrestle with us, and Jesus allowed himself to get pinned to a cross. That's what it took for us to experience the love that flows from God. God could pin me in a nanosecond, but God lets me wrestle. I may come away with elbow burns or with a limp, but God stays on the mat with me for as long as I need in order for me to understand that love that flows from God. We have a God who wrestles with us. The other thing I love about this story is there's a name change, not only for Jacob. Jacob becomes Israel, but the place gets a name in this story too. It's one of those naming stories. They're all throughout the book of Genesis where these names come from. And so Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved." It's a scary thing to see God face to face. The underlying assumption is if you really saw God face to face, it's over. It's too amazing. It would overwhelm you. But I've seen God face to face in this wrestling, and my life is preserved. So he calls the place Peniel, God's face. But I want you to look a few verses ahead, then in chapter 33, verse 10, after he's had this wonderful reunion with his brother, after Esau has come to greet him, running to him, bypassing the gifts, "I don't need the livestock, and who introduced me to your family? Tell me who these people are." He comes running to embrace him. At the end of that, this is what Jacob says. "No, please, if I find favor with you, then accept my present from my hand. For truly to see your face is like seeing the face of God, since you have received me with such favor." Do you see the connections? He wrestles it out with God at night. And then the next day, because of that, he's able to see the face of God in his brother. Peniel, we're called to see the face of God in each other. There is this vertical dimension to our faith, but there is an equally powerful horizontal dimension to our faith. And when we are truly people of faith, when we see God, we'll be able to see it not only this way when we're looking up, but when we're looking out and into each other's eyes. And we're finding moments of reconciliation. That's when we see the face of God. And here's another word of hope for those of you who are living with long-standing family rifts. Some of you might be sitting there today. You don't have to tell me who you are. But sometimes healing and reconciliation takes a long time in families. But there's hope. This is 20 years down the road. Didn't happen overnight. Two last words to leave you with. Apologizing does not always mean wrong. It just means that you value relationships more than your ego. So for those of you who are sitting there with some broken family relationships with a brother, a sister, a father, a mother, a spouse, whoever it is, maybe God is nudging you, calling you to say you're sorry, even if you knew you weren't wrong. But you probably were. Because the first to apologize is the bravest, and the first to forgive is the strongest. And the first to forget or let go is the happiest. when we find ways to bridge those painful gaps in our relationships, even within our families, the people that we love and the people that drive us crazy, you just might see the face of God. You just might see the face of God.